My next guest used to be a reporter, and like all reporters these days, she did most of her work on word processors of one sort or another. But now Cheryl Ohring is an artist, and she uses an old-fashioned manual typewriter. Her best-known work is I Wish to Say. She performs in a 1960s secretary costume, her hair pulled back in a bun, and then she asks people what they'd like to say to the President of the United States. They dictate letters, and she types it on the typewriter. Well, like her reporting, her art also engages the public in discourse. But as an artist, when she approaches people, she found they really open up. Cheryl Ohring is assistant professor of art at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro and my guest on the State of Things. Cheryl, welcome to the State of Things.
Thanks. It's here. Great.
So you used to live in San Francisco, right? And
that's right.
You were a reporter.
That's right.
What kind of things you report on?
Well, actually, it's in San Francisco. I'd made it all the way to the city desk. You know, I had some reporting behind me, and I got invited to be an editor. And I was editing things like education and science and health. But wow, from that last news story, you really see how tough it is to be in the news industry these days.
But something attracted you to it. I mean, you sort of liked the idea. What was it about this business that attracted you initially?
Well, I'm interested in people and their stories, and you know, when I got to college at the University of Colorado, I didn't know what to major in, and journalism offered a chance to learn about a lot of different things.
So eventually you moved to Berlin on a journalism fellowship, is that right?
That's right.
Tell me about that.
Well, I got a two-month fellowship to go to Berlin in 1997, and I took a six-month leave from my job in San Francisco and, you know, did the two-month fellowship and then hung out in Berlin and the idea at that time was to write. You know, I was writing and actually started seeing typewriters to write on. You know, and there was something
very...
Well,
this is 1997, by the way, right?
Yes, 1997.
So, but you're still determined to be a journalist of some sort?
Oh, yes. Right? I was working as a journalist, but I was thinking about making the switch into something more creative. At that time, I thought it would be creative writing or poetry or something like that.
What was the art scene in Berlin at the time?
Oh, it was very vibrant. Things happening all the time, these sort of underground scenes. There were sort of houses that people would just take over that were, you know, weren't kind of squatted houses that artists would go into and make art in, make music in. People would stay up all night. You know, it was an all night art scene, I would say.
So you're interested in people's stories. You're interested in journalism. You get to Berlin. You start thinking about creative writing, and then there's this other art scene. Did you at that point switch? Did you start finding yourself called to be a visual artist?
It was a gradual progression, and it definitely had to do with being in Berlin and trying to learn German. So when I first got there, I spoke a little bit of German. I'd taken high school German, you know, didn't really speak it very well, and was writing in English, writing poetry, writing some stories and things like that, and then started getting more into German and trying to leave English behind and really learn the language. And at that point, I started to think more visually. It was very much connected to that transition into another language.
And you were inspired by the Nazi book burning in Berlin, is that right?
Yes, I mean, inspired is a funny word, right? So what happened was there was this place in central Berlin that I often found myself walking towards. It was a place called Babelplatz, a big square in the middle of central eastern part of Berlin. And in the middle of the square, there was about a 1 meter square window that looked down into a room filled with white bookshelves. And it was a sculptural piece called Bibliothek, or Library, by the Israeli sculptor Michel Ullmann. And it just became a place that I went to again and again and again to try to understand, not even, how can you even understand it, but try to just come to terms maybe with what had happened in that place.
Well, we'll talk about what happened next when my conversation with Cheryl Ohring continues. She's an assistant professor in the art department at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro, talking about her project, I Wish to Know, and we'll continue that conversation in a moment. But first, Rhiannon Giddens is here from the Carolina Chocolate Drop. She's going to play us out after I tell you you're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
Buck is dead, last word he said, don't let no trolling in my bread. Judge Buck is dead. Last word he said, don't put no shortening in my bread.
This is The State of Things. We're live from the Upstage Cabaret of Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. Today, talking with Cheryl Ohring. She's an assistant professor of art at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro, talking about her project, I Wish to Say. And Cheryl, we left you in Berlin. You were taken by a particular sculpture, a piece that you had seen every day. And that led to a project, did it not, called Writer's Block?
That's right.
Tell us about that.
So, like I said, Babel Platz, this place where the Nazi book burnings of 1933 took place, became a sort of a place that I would go to to contemplate and try to think about that. And at the same time, I was visiting the flea markets of Berlin, which were quite filled with amazing things from the East as people sort of moved out of their apartments and had their apartments renovated. All their things would land up at the flea markets, and I started seeing typewriters and started actually asking myself a question, what would I do if I had a lot of typewriters? Because I suddenly knew that there were, typewriters available in Berlin. And I started collecting them and had, a small collection in my apartment in Berlin, and came up with this idea to do some kind of memorial, some kind of action that would be a tribute to the writers whose books were burned in the Nazi book burning. And this is a long and winding story, but at the same time, I would see Berlin at that time was under a huge renovation, right? There was construction everywhere. There were these giant construction cranes and construction steel. And this steel kind of captured my imagination as well, this rusty construction steel that's in a sort of grid. And so I imagined a cage filled with typewriters and as a sort of symbolic reminder about the censorship that had happened at that time. And
I love the fact that you asked yourself, what would I do if I had a lot of typewriters? I have never asked that question. So this is really the mind of the artist, and now there's your insight. So you developed this project, and you call it, was this Writer's Block?
Yes, it was called Writer's Block.
And at the time, were you experiencing Writer's Block as well, or was this just the symbol of censorship?
Well, sometimes hindsight is better than, your current, the contemporaneous judgments. But I definitely think at the time I was going through my own form of Writer's Block as I sort of moved out of English and into German and was trying to express myself. And suddenly, or maybe somewhat gradually, but I became to think more visually, and that grew out of that experience of writer's block, I'm sure.
And then you toured this around a bit, did you? Do you take it through Europe?
Oh, that's right. Do you want to hear the story of how it was made? I don't know.
Yeah.
It was, a crazy, crazy year because I, set out to collect hundreds and hundreds of typewriters. Ultimately, I collected about 600 typewriters in 1 year, which was I had no money, I had no car, I had no place to store these things. These things are heavy. It was crazy. It was really crazy to try, to try to do this. But Berlin at that time felt like full of possibility. It felt extremely, anything was possible. And so I found someone who basically sent around a press release saying I was looking for typewriters and started getting all these calls from people saying, they would donate their typewriter to the cause. And then Daimler Chrysler actually lent me a Mercedes. I had no money at the time, really no money. I was living in a one-room apartment. with very little heat. And, you know, I had a Mercedes for 2 months to go around and collect these typewriters. It was amazing. And, it's, you know, Berlin, it's very inexpensive to live. And so I had a lot of volunteers. I had a lot of students, artists, people hanging out that wanted to come help me. And so, you know, someone would call up and say, I have a typewriter on, you know, Kastanienallee, and we would take the Mercedes over and pick it up. And but, you know, that still wasn't enough typewriters. I still needed more. And so there were a couple things that happened, and this is, you know, I'm definitely a firm believer in kind of using your imagination and imagining something totally crazy and then the world coming up with ways for making it happen. So I was, you know, maybe a month or so from the show and didn't have enough typewriters and also didn't have the permit to do it, but that's sort of a side story. But I didn't have enough typewriters. Someone had, at that point, a construction firm had given me an empty space that was sort of a half-built building to collect all these typewriters in. And there was a typewriter collector in England who had a big collection of typewriters, and he had stored them in a shed that was not waterproof. And so they'd gotten rained on and gotten all moldy and sort of really disgusting. And he heard about my project and ended up sending a semi full of typewriters. I'm serious. Like, I just remember that day. It was such an amazing day. The semi full of dirty, disgusting typewriters showed up. And I had a crew of maybe a dozen people there helping me. And we had to clean these things because they were awful. They were so dirty. You could definitely couldn't type on them anymore, but they were perfect for the sculptures.
Right. Well, why did you feel but you weren't going to type on them. You're going right. to add them to your sculpture. So you eventually pulled this whole thing together, and you made the sculpture.
That's right.
And it toured, and it played. There was some acclaim. People noticed it. And
that's right. The first thing, though, was getting the permit in Berlin. That was the big thing. So, you know, the city of Berlin, you know, turned it.
I'll ask you one question. I want to hear about the permit, but I also understand that one of those typewriters was fairly interesting in that it had an SS insignia on it.
That's right. So the other sort of big place that I got typewriters from was from Prague. There was someone that I met in Prague who said, you know, I'll collect typewriters for you here. And then one of the volunteers took a truck and drove to a little van and drove to Prague and came back with a van full of typewriters. And one of those typewriters had on the number 5 key still had the SS symbol on it. And in Germany, those keys were by law cut off of the typewriter. So none of the typewriters that I'd collected in Germany had that key. But this one that came from the Czech Republic had that key, which, you know, kind of gave me the shivers just seeing it.
So now you have to get a permit in Berlin.
That's right. And, you know, I didn't speak German that well at that point. I'd only been there less than a year or something. And here I am knocking on the door of the Berlin City Hall saying, you know, I want to do this crazy project. And they, you know, it's a very big bureaucracy, so there was a lot of paperwork involved. So I turned in the paperwork. And
did you type it, or do you use a word?
I think it was typed. Okay. It must have been typed. My handwriting's awful. And, you know, they kept saying, oh, we'll get to it, we'll get to it, we'll get to it. And finally they said, you know, we're not going to let you do this. And, you know, and the guy kind of took me aside and he said, you know, off the record, you know, I'm from East Berlin, and this is kind of scary to us. Like, we don't know, maybe the neo-Nazis will come out and march and protest or whatever. It was too political for them. And so they turned it down, but I had a friend at one of the newspapers, and I was sort of bemoaning the fact that it had been turned down to her, and she wrote a story in one of the Berlin newspapers saying that the city had turned it down, and the next day they approved it.
Wow. Well, that's amazing because it was the theme, censorship, that they thought might trigger a kind of political, right? But ultimately, this sort of democratic process in the press is the thing that allows the project to go through.
That's
it's
right.
It's really sublime. That's wonderful. So it gets done. So how does all of this lead to I Wish to Say, and maybe you can describe that project for us and the evolution of the sculpture to the current project.
Sure. Well, like you mentioned, so the Writer's Block went on tour. It went to Budapest and Boston and then to New York. And at the time that it was going to New York, I thought, you know, this is my chance. This is, you know, I've got to move to New York because I had never lived in New York, and it seemed like a good time to go. So I was in New York, but the Writer's Block show was installed at Bryant Park right behind the New York Public Library. And in a really amazing show. I was there for 3 weeks. And then I started thinking about different projects, and I was invited actually by a group called the First Amendment Project in Oakland to go to Oakland, talk to them about showing Writer's Block. But then they said, you know, well, since you're coming, since we're paying for your flight, is there something else that you want to do while you're here? And I had been thinking about the idea of what ultimately became I Wish to Say, about going out onto the streets around the country and talking to sort of ordinary people and asking them what they would like to say to the president. And this grew out of my experience of being in Berlin, especially in the post-9/11 period, and encountering a lot of negativity about Americans' political views from, you know, from Europeans, and wanting to sort of understand what Americans really thought when once I came back to this country.
So tell us then what you did. When did the idea of just sort of dressing up mm-hmm. in 60s garb and sitting down with a typewriter?
Well, I went out to Oakland and was basically going to take my typewriter, get all dressed up in old-fashioned secretary gear, and I went to a theater in Oakland and also to a cafe in San Francisco. This was in early 2004, at the beginning of the second re-election campaign of President Bush.
And you actually went to the RNC in 2004.
That's right.
And asked people to write a letter to the president.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I set up all over New York, from Harlem to Brooklyn to downtown Manhattan, and asked people to dictate a postcard to the president.
Peter Jennings found you?
That's right. Peter Jennings followed me around on that.
You became the person of the week because of the... So what kind of notes were you getting? Give us an idea.
Well, in 2004, some of the ones that I remember the most, there was one of the very first shows in Oakland, someone sat down and said, you know, I would like the same health coverage that the members of Congress get, you know, and that's still an issue today. 2012 in Charlotte, people are still talking about health care.
Well, we have put that question to the audience here, and you brought three typists with you. Michelle Lopez, Jacob Moncla, and Shawnee Becker are here in the audience, and they're ready to type and to take a message to the president. And so we put it to our audience, and we have some volunteers here. First, can I ask you your name?
My name is Sydney Jen Groh.
Sydney?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And well, I guess, what would you like to tell the president?
Dear Mr. President, first of all, congratulations on your election, re-election. I've just moved from Tennessee to North Carolina, where I hoped that my vote for you would be important, and broadly, it was, but I'm sorry about North Carolina.
Thank you very much. That's wonderful. Well, I guess if we wanted some tension, we should be at the RNC now. If we're going to get that kind of, what is it about the outfit and the typewriter? Do you think? I mean, do you think you get a different kind of response than you would have as a journalist with a word processor going out getting man on the street interviews?
Oh, absolutely. That's sort of the heart of the work, I think. You know, people. The reason is that when I am, and normally I am dressed up in secretary costume. Today, I'm here with my trusty crew of typists, and people will come up to you and ask what you're doing, and it just starts the conversation in a really different way. People open up and sit down and tell you the most personal things in a very short time.
It's a little bit like saying you're a doctor when you go to a party, isn't it? You know,
that's
oh,
right.
Yeah, let me show you that. I got this scar here, and it just won't heal up. But it's interesting that they won't. But journalists, I mean, that's our job, right? So why not open up to a journalist? Why open up to a secretary?
I think because they make the first step of coming to me. You know, they see me dressed up. They see the typewriter. They're curious. And they also see that I'm sort of putting myself out there by doing this kind of crazy thing of getting all dressed up and going out with a typewriter.
Got some skin in the game, and that's the thing about being, you can actually hide behind the profession. And someday, well, we have another audience member here. Can I ask your name?
Steve Scott.
Steve, what would you like to tell the president?
Dear Mr. President, I'm the father of an 8-year-old daughter. I know you have some lovely daughters, but I'm very concerned about what Americans eat these days and what's in our food. And the processed foods, genetically modified organisms, and things like that. And I'd like to propose that you propose legislation or support legislation that allows us to know what's in our food, particularly GMO kinds of things. So I know you have a lovely garden there at the White House, so you know what's in your food, but we'd like to know what's in ours, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me ask you, yeah. Let me ask you a question. When you're asked the question before the show, we asked for volunteers, so you knew kind of what you were going to say. Is it different for you when you're asked to frame this thought that you've had? And I'm guessing it's not the first time this has occurred to you. Different for you to frame it as a letter? Does it change the way you think about this question?
Yeah, I think it. You get more of an idea of what the background of your question is. You want to frame it in a way that is personal to you and will have an impact that way, I think.
Yeah, thank you, Steve.
Can I put a P.S. on there?
Yep, sure. Yeah, we've got a little bit.
If you haven't already, Mr. President, please invite the Carolina Chocolate Drops to the White House. Thank you.
Well, and ask him to bring food, because if it's North Carolina food, he's going to eat better than he ever has. So tell me a little bit more about that, the idea of dialogue. Steve just said, you know, I've been asked to actually frame my thought, to think about it. There's plenty of discourse. There's plenty of talk in America these days. But the quality is a question.
You know, and I have thought a lot about this. What is it also that makes this work? The other thing I think that's really special about this setup is that the typist plays the role of a very active listener. And I think people these days don't necessarily feel listened to. You know, things like Facebook, you put your stuff out there all the time, but you don't know if anybody's listening. But this is this very intense one-on-one exchange with someone.
And I guess, so you feel you're being listened to, and you can hear that it's being recorded.
Yes.
I mean, that had just occurred to me now, the idea that there's a real sort of physical evidence that there's going to be a record of this.
That's right, and the typist is sort of a symbol of authority or something. You know, they're taking this down like an official would, and so it's taken very seriously.
Well, let's take another one. Welcome. Can I have your name, please?
Barry Strulson.
Barry, what would you like to tell the president?
Well, I'd like to ditto what Steve just said about chocolate drops. Yes, definitely a job. All right, dear Mr. President. If, in fact, you are serious about promoting peace in the Middle East, I suggest that you visit Israel. You haven't yet, and I think it's time. I think you need to go to Tel Aviv, Jerusalem. I think you need to go to Ramallah. I think you need to go to Bethlehem. I think you need to go to the kibbutzim and talk to the people, all of the people. Find out what it is that they want, just like you tried to do in the election this past election, finding out what we want from you.
Thank you, Barry. It is amazing to me, as someone who's done this job for a while and invites callers frequently on the program, how different this sounds to me when I've asked somebody to frame it than a caller who... And we get smart calls. People are making sense. But this sounds different and much more thought out.
Yeah, that seems to be a hallmark or sort of a trademark of this performance, that it really gets people to think about what they're saying in a fairly serious way and then to be very articulate about it.
Is this a form of journalism?
Oh, well, that's a good question. It's about as close as journalism and art can get.
Why is it art?
Well, you know, you don't wear a dress like this and go out with a typewriter, do you?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, and I get a lot of... really interesting responses.
I'm sure.
but never germane. So to the point, what are some of the interesting... I know, did you bring some with you?
And I did.
Can you tell us some of the more interesting responses you've gotten over the years?
Sure. I chose a few from the show in Charlotte. I had a crew of typists in Charlotte during the Democratic National Convention, and I chose some that I'd like to share with you. Let's see... This one maybe gives you an idea about the thoughtfulness, so that's why I chose it. Dear Mr. President, I was so sorry for some of the rude humor slandering you at the Republican convention. I'm a Republican, but I support your leadership and especially appreciate your wise emphasis on community gardening. I lead a community garden at an elementary school in Charlotte. Sincerely, Carla Vitech. And then there's the sort of very poignant ones. Dear Mr. President, I would like you to bring my son home safely from Afghanistan. With 2 exclamation points from Karen Huskisson. One more. Okay. This is one of my all-time favorites. Dear Mr. President, this is from Scarlett Law. She's maybe about 8. Dear Mr. President, I've always wanted to be a president, but I don't know how to. I wonder how to be a president. Would I have to type fast? Would I have to use a pencil? Would I have to do a lot of paperwork? Would I have a giant bed? I wonder, Sincerely, Scarlett Long.
That's great. Cheryl Oring. Cheryl, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
Cheryl Oring is an artist and an art professor based in Greensboro. She brought with us her typists, Michelle Lopez, Jacob Moncla, and Shawnee Becker. Thank you so much for being on the program. Rhiannon Giddens is here from the Carolina Chocolate Drop. She's going to play us out of this segment and then join us up next for a conversation and much more music. Stay with us on The State of Things.